Hello, this is Casey Tony, editor of Campaign Skyjacks. I'm here today because I don't have anything to put before the episode, and I just want to publicly apologize to all the fans out there who were really hoping for some cold open guffaws or at least a small smirking bemusement, but there is none, and I understand your frustration. I do suggest that you put all complaints in writing and mail them to our address at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Feel free to vent out just how mad you are about there not being a cold open. No matter the kind of language you use and the kind of threats you make, just go ahead and send those complaints in to Skyjacks, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, care of James D'Amato, and you spell James D'Amato J-O-E-B-I-D-E-N, and you know, go include some drawings in there too, and you know, like any like manifestos or blueprints that you just really gotta just please send your complaints about there being no cold open. We want to hear from you. Hashtag join the conversation.
I want to join Douglas. Douglas, you are running.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to establish at this point that whatever the Griffin range for your chickens and roosters, like, it's got to be big. Like, this is, we talk about a pen, but it's the sort of thing where this would be like a cattle pasture in another place. Like, this is a lot of space that has these high fences sort of keeping it in, but the amount of land that it takes up is quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Running off in the direction that you're going is probably like going to take, you know, 20 minutes for you to reach like wherever the source of the sound might be. Now, I know we haven't provided stats, hard stats for Douglas yet, but this is a point where I think do you have either Genesis dice or a dice roller?
I can pull up a dice roller. Have an idea for while I was mm-hmm. running, especially since it's so far.
Rollerblades.
There you go.
Yeah. I pulled it. I remember.
Yeah,
last
he's got Heelys.
Heelys are not fast. They are difficult to navigate. That's yes. not a factor mode.
It's like, well, I would own a pair, I think, unironically.
Right, I got a dice roll.
Every
up.
Single time throughout my entire life, every time I've seen a pair of Heelys, I'm like, one day. Mm. And I've been doing that internally since the 12th grade. I don't
hell no, I can barely walk normally. I don't need an excuse. I'm gonna heal it. Boom, hit the ground. No. As Douglas is running, He puts his hand to his face and just lets out a really loud whistle. And then I would say probably, he doesn't really keep them at the house, but you would see coming from the, what do we want to call them? The chicken stable, I guess, at this point.
Cause yeah, they're so big. Yeah, I mean, there got to be like, they're chickens of different sizes, obviously, because mm-hmm. you've got the pen for like the giants for those chickens that are like pushing 15, 16 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, like a riding chicken, mm-hmm. like a good riding
this
chicken,
big old
they probably
Chucky
got
Chocobo
a stable.
Chicken.
Mm-hmm. Gonna, yeah.
So you see one of those come flying out towards him. And just without missing a beat, as he's running, when the chicken gets close enough, he's just going to kind of, he's going to turn, because the chicken's running not not towards the pin. It's kind of running at an angle, almost perpendicular. So he's going to turn, throw his arm up, grab the chicken, and just kind of like launch himself onto the back of it, and then just keep heading towards the pin.
All right. This is great. Jonnet, like, you see...
I have something I want to do that I feel like I haven't really been able to pull off super successfully, maybe ever, but I'm going to try it again. And yeah. So Jonnet's going to see this happening. It's going to be happening. I assume Douglas in general is like faster than Jonnet. And like with the added chocobo pace, Jonnet's going to try to like launch himself with earth magic, the earth magic rocket plate that I keep going for, and we're going to see if it works.
Hell yeah.
Because if, in a perfect world, cinematically, it works and Jonnet lands right there on the chicken behind, behind Douglas.
This is an arcane check for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Two yellow, one green. What am I rolling against?
Hard purple. Three purple.
Okay. Okay. Well, that totals out to be a triumph and one threat.
Cool. Oh. I know exactly what happens. So, aiming to, like, jump using earth magic to catch up to your dad. So, there is a moment where... you realize, like, running, I am not going to catch up, especially as, like, you see this chicken coming around. And your dad, you know, even in his older years, he jumps on the back of that bird just as spry as you remember from when you were young. You stop running. And I think, like, you take a hard stance and fling your arms out to your side. Your eye opens and starts blazing. Like there is a pulse of light that is like energy from the universe, and you sort of grabbing the reins of the universe around you with the magic from your eye, and a pulse ripples out from the ground and then ripples out back. And you can feel that ripple underneath your feet fling you forward. We see you in the air. The wind is rushing past you as you are in your finest clothes. You've got, you know, your sort of like triumphant homecoming makeup on. You've taken off your headband. It's underneath like a clear night sky. The moon is nearly full, so there is like light in the area. The wind is whistling past you, and it feels like you... kind of what Gable said, like, you are getting more control over your powers. They are slowly but surely coming to heal. And there has been a lot that you have been through recently. People telling you that you are ready to take on new challenges, ready to learn. And for a moment in the air, in this pristine night, this night that is supposed to be partially a ceremony for your coming of age and your proving of your worth to your family and your community. Like, you can feel that. And then you see Douglas. You see Douglas underneath you. And then you see Douglas underneath you and shrinking away as you have overshot Douglas by quite a wild margin as you are flying through the air, and your tight pose in the air starts to become looser and more panicky, and then you boom hit a hay bale.
That's a triumph.
Well, wait. can we say he hits the hay bale, and then like there's a second like ripple of earth, and then, like, the hay bale explodes, and then, like, he jumps out of the hay bale and, like, lands, like, kind of right side up as he just, like, rebounds a little bit.
Yeah, I like it. Like, yeah, what the earth magic has done is it absorbs the shock of your fling. So you're not hurt from this at all, because the triumph is like, this is a success that is on top of the thing that Jonnet was trying to do, that doesn't achieve what he was trying to do, but still achieves something good for him. And what I think it is, you found out, like, you do now understand this spell, the spell that will allow the earth to launch you and catch you. And you kind of did that instinctually. So, boom, you slam into this hay bale, and the ground underneath that would have been hard, like, ripples to meet you. And then, like, sproing kind of pops you up. So, like, there's a little bit of panic that set in. So, like, you got a little bit of,
Okay, and, no, I'm good.
Yeah. And then you feel an arm grab your arm, and it's Douglas pulling you onto the back of this chicken.
We are going to talk about that later, but let's go.
Pretty cool, though.
I would like, before we jump to our next party members, I would like a daunting perception check.
Daunting?
From the both of us?
Yeah, you can both make this.
I think. Yeah, because this might be on you, Bees.
This is my first time rolling Genesis dice, so
help. Yeah. Bees, I believe you are going to have two yellows and a green for your perception.
My perception is farmer. Two green.
Okay. All right, so two yellows and a green versus four purple. Alrighty. One threat.
Oh,
one threat. So that's going to be three failures and a threat.
Okay, so what this is, I think Douglas had to go a little bit out of his way to catch Jonnet on this, like, flinging jump. But you pull him up onto the bird, say, we're going to talk about that later, and then route again towards the sounds that you were hearing. Let's cut, and I want to cut over to Travis and Gable, the two kind of unaccounted for members of this party. One of you is a big turkey, and the other one is Travis. What are we doing here?
How far from being out of the city are we?
That's the thing. It's hard to call this a city. Like,
sure.
These are different farmsteads that have been, like, put up along kind of a common path in, like, fields of wheat and grain that they are kind of intentionally trying to keep wild. While they have cleared out some sections for animals to live, most of, like, the growth around you is just, like, wild prairie life. So being out of town or away from civilization, like, that's not hard to do. You just have to pick a direction.
Okay, well, we definitely both point. We're like, which way are we going to go? We both point past each other in opposite directions, first and foremost.
This way.
Well, I'll go this way and you can go that way and we'll see who gets to the woods first.
No, we both need to get to the woods at the same time. You are misunderstanding what is supposed to happen here. I'm going to play act like I am wrangling a wild animal. Perhaps I could even have I'm riding this. Oh, it's out of control. Stay away. So enough people see, but not enough people are convinced that you're not exactly what you are. And then we just go into the forest and hang out.
Okay, then. If you want me to act like a wild turkey storming through town, I will gladly do it.
It's through town. I don't think you need to. Just, like, adjacent to town. No one get too close. But it's, like, really just, this is a good acting opportunity for you. Okay.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to chase you. You're not going to hurt me. Agree?
Yeah, you're going to chase me.
No, but the second part, you're not going to hurt me.
Yeah, you're not going to hurt me.
No, nope. You say, Gable, I will not hurt you in my play acting as a turkey.
Gable, I will not hurt you in my play acting as a turkey.
Fantastic. All right.
But I may hurt you. as a friend.
No.
I like Travis, what are you doing as you say that? Because it definitely feels like you're about to do something wild.
Oh, like a peck. Gotta do a peck.
Can I talk you into pecking the back of Gable's like clothing and picking them up off the ground? Yes.
Yeah.
No.
So yeah.
No.
Oh, sorry. And as he says that, they fall from his mouth.
25 feet.
That's only like a 1 foot drop for them.
Okay. Well, yeah, but in the Genesis rules, that would
That's
be
true. That's
more than lethal. Yeah.
No, Gable's gonna get up and like just start chasing him. You get out of here. You get out of here. Just go.
Okay. Gobble, gobble, gobble. And he's just like running and flailing in a very not turkey-like way.
Yeah, maybe I feel like Travis might pronounce gobble
gobel.
He's only ever seen it written.
Goble. Goble.
Stop making noises.
Am I a silent turkey?
You fucking better be. I wish you were.
Gobble. Gobble.
Just let.
I would like very much a montage of the chase scene between you two, the play-acting chase scene that takes you through and then out of town.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously Gable's chasing Travis, then run across Travis. The street. Travis is chasing Gable. They're both chasing a Frankenstein's monster.
Okay.
Gable runs past a person who's reading the newspaper, and it's really Travis who is reading the newspaper.
A giant turkey with a tiny, regular sized newspaper.
I can't remember exactly clearly, but I feel like we've done this exact chase scene bit.
We've done it at least three times.
Every other week.
Yeah.
I think like earlier this arc, I might be mistaken, but I think earlier this arc we did exactly this.
We run by whoever did it in earlier in the arc.
Yeah, there's sort of like an out of time sequence there. You know, folks, there's got to be a fruit cart. There's got to be
Fruit cart. I mean, there's a fruit cart. There are two dudes carrying, you know, a pane of glass across the street.
There's the crate people from Bougeniv who are here to get trade crates and chickens, and they're still up to their shenanigans.
Oh, I like that very much, Liz. We've found out that the chickens in Bougeniv were literally chickens from this area.
Okay.
So for the fruit cart, can I suggest that as they're running towards it, that Travis clears it easily, but then Gable runs into it.
I like the idea that Gable runs through it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of apples and fruits, and Gable like catches all of them as much as they can, and like gets them all, but then like
one bonks off your forehead.
And then I slip. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll pay for that. This turkey that I don't know.
Someone is riding a bicycle with a basket, with a grocery bag, with a baguette in the front. I shove them off the bike and steal it and start biking away.
You immediately crush the bicycle.
To 1 foot.
Yeah.
Or no, I do. I get two bikes and I use them as roller skates.
There we go.
There we go.
Gable, there's somebody on a unicycle who looks exactly like that kid from college who used a unicycle everywhere that went to every single school.
Can I borrow this?
Y'all know Trey?
I have a friend who does unicycle. I don't know how you say it.
No, you say it. Well, that's how you would say somebody doing a drug. So yeah.
He does unicycle.
He's a unicycle user.
And for a very long time, he was like training to win the Guinness World Record for like longest time juggling while unicycling.
Huh. What is the record out of curiosity?
It's not that. I forget if it was longest time or longest distance. Maybe it was longest distance.
A minute and a half.
Because it was only like a mile or something. It was like not very far. I think and you can drop them like three times. It was weird. It was like
way too
far. What? Drop them?
Guinness.
That shouldn't carry
your standards.
I know.
You can drop
It's weirdly enough
wild
because they actually have to pay to have somebody observe the record. I could see if somebody was having mad nerves after being able to do it off camera, they would give them the grace of free strikes.
Because like, I flew out here for this. Just try it again. Try it again.
I believe you.
So does this now mean that Gable is now on a unicycle juggling apples
juggling the fruit? Right.
Yeah, you got to be juggling the same apples from before. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. So it's not, you haven't dropped the apples yet, Gable. You still have the apples. The fruit cart owner is running behind you. And I really want plates to be involved. Where can we get plates and bowls in here?
Oh, well, we could do like the Tangled Ever After.
Oh.
Where there's maybe a store that sells plates, but they have them on display, like hanging outside, and I like skate through and they each hit my head and it's like smash in my head.
That's really easy to get at Pat Pate's Bowls and Plates. So.
Yeah, I like the idea of you running through this plate display. But here's the thing. You're a turkey, right? So your body is covered in these dense, dense feathers. I don't think the plates shatter immediately upon you running through them. I think instead, Gable unicycles up behind you as you're roller skating through these plates and has to catch each one of the plates.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, you as they'll toss like an apple up and the fruit cart guy running behind and with a basket will like catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And as then to replace that, you have to juggle a plate. Like you toss the fruit to grab the plate.
Go to the One Shot Network website so you can play the mini game of this chase sequence.
Truly.
It's really crunchy. It's actually not as much fun as it sounds. It's just like really mechanical.
But
it's
a text-based. We spent a lot of money and got the Benny Hill theme song to play underneath the entire thing.
Yeah,
I was literally Googling the Benny Hill theme song so I could listen to it during this.
We have to commission Arnie for like a sphere equivalent of the
Yakety Sax.
Really do.
We have been commissioned
into a lot of bits that we've done.
Yes,
the late night sweet tea house like on this main avenue, and it's al fresco. So like Oromar and the other captain are kind of sitting outside. Oromar is just about to take a swig of sweet tea when in the distance, dum dum dum.
I would actually like to come in to a window. There's like a big picture window is this tea house. This chase is happening outside. And your conversation can be happening in front of the window where elements of this chase are escalating in the background. But you are sitting across from Dantonia Crossblade, Captain of the Storm. Hey heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the Midroll. Before we get back to the show, I want to take a quick moment and make a name correction for a Patreon backer. Thank you. Abe Scorsoni, thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our backers on Patreon. Everyone who supports our show through donations to Patreon makes it possible. We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without your support. You pay for our actors, our editors, all the equipment and services that keep the lights on, and it makes the show incredible. And I've got good news for Patreon backers. We have more bonus content coming to you on this We've got more bonus content coming to you this Friday. And on Tuesday, we posted a new call for Dear Uhuru submissions. So if you'd like to send in a scene suggestion, a public service announcement, a crew audition, an advice letter, an ad or business offer, or any suggestions, comments, or complaints for the ship's complaint box, be sure you're backing at the $10 level and look for instructions on where to send your submissions over on the Patreon feed. And if you haven't backed before, now is a great time to start. Now then, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky! Thank you. are sitting across from Dantonia Crossblade, Captain of the Storm. And you know, and you've been playing it cool. Mm-hmm. Like, we've established that Orimar is familiar to this person. Like this person is talking as though she knows Orimar. Mm-hmm. And Orimar, you know that you know this person from somewhere. But, like, you've been kind of engaging with the conversation as though you both know where you know each mm-hmm. other from.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And this happens to Orimar a lot. You're a celebrity. Yeah. You're one of the greatest pirates to ever sail the skies. So you're playing it cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you and Dantonia are sitting casually the way only very accomplished Corsair captains can sit in a public space in the heart of Red Feather territory, knowing that any minute danger could rear at their backs and that should it, they would be able to meet it in kind.
Mm.
There are glasses of Acheron sweet tea poured in front of you. It is a beautiful blend of like a local herbal tea to the area that is made sweet by, I want to say like a malt. I feel like it's sweetened with malt. And it is just this delicious kind of earthy. I don't know if anybody has had like there's a particular sun tea in Japan that has this really earthy bent to it. It's a beautiful flavor, but would taste even much better with some malt added to it. Hmm. That's what we've got going on in this tea house.
I gotcha.
It is a cozy and relaxed vibe.
Hmm. Someone says to Slam, I says, you can't keep squeezing oranges on your chest like that. That's not how you go and cure scurvy. And so Slam says, this conversation
tells a joke.
Yeah, he's surprisingly more relaxed. He's not having to kind of keep up appearances for his crew.
Now, I forget, I guess you are drinking the tea at this point, so we could argue that that's lubricating your vocal cords, or is this happening in sign?
So previously, when there was a very serious conversation kind of going on in the Kessler's main living room, and Gable and Orimar were kind of, I think, in my head, sitting in the kitchen, and he took some time to kind of, you know, top himself up. But now he's drinking sweet tea on top of that, and there's only so much liquid this one body can hold, especially since it just sits there. So he's keeping a mental note out for that, but there's a hard limit to how much sweet tea this boy can drink.
Oh no.
And then what did he say?
So well, he's like, well, it doesn't matter, he says, I still have these muscles. And he turns around and he's showing me his buns, right, which are as well toned and well oiled as the rest of him.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how amused is Dantonia by this intentionally filthy anecdote?
Yeah, I think Dantonia is laughing. Like, this is clearly, you know, a captain's story. Like, you something a story, like, you've been going back and forth telling stories about, you know, various crewmates. So she's into it. Like, she's like, it looks like she's waiting for the punchline.
Oh gosh, now I have to kind of make up a punchline to a joke that doesn't exist. Give me a sec.
Yeah, well, the thing, the joke doesn't exist. Like, we've set up. He turns around, his buns are as toned as the rest of him, and
so I says, well, that's for the hamburgers, isn't it?
And yeah, Dantonia erupts in laughter, slaps you on the shoulder.
There is a small delay, and then Orimar shifts, being like, oh yes, that was an impact. I need to respond to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a wild, wild crew we have. Yes. I'm sure you've been having similar kind of trials and tribulations with your crew. How are they all doing?
Well, it's a smaller ship. We, you know, more of a close-knit group. Everybody watches each other's backs. It leads to less characters. Most things, you know, you get to know people really well.
Yeah, well, I try my best to And he slowly shifts back into his more serious tone of voice, realizing the conversation's moved on. I do my best to try and look out for my crew on as a personal level as I can, but we do have a crew of hundreds of people, so we have to, you know, do my best. Fortunately, Bathroom Barry can keep a record of people along with the best of them.
So you're still flying with Barry?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, it's, keep the crew members that want to keep you around, you know. We go on so many journeys in the name of making our mark in the world and making our mark into red feather ships that the people that want to stick around for the ride are worth treasuring, especially since in these times it's not the safest to be doing what we do. Wouldn't you agree?
She nods. Feathers have been pretty riled up in this area recently. If it wasn't so important to Zana, I might have had to skip this stop altogether.
Well, nice of you to have taken the time out. I'm really glad that the rest of the crew were okay with us taking a rest here while we celebrate Mr. Kessler's coming of age. I think a number of them are deciding to go to the resort down the way. Not for me, personally. But you can't yuck other people's yums, or so I'm told.
No, I'd say Zana is the center of it. Zana's the reason that we're making this trip. But there are more than a few people who wanted to be in this area and wanted to be here for the party. There are a few things that I don't know I'm ready to face.
Orimar, because the conversation is so relaxed, he actually tilts his head and does a human expression of mild confusion and then realizes that's not the correct response for this particular conversation and hides it, but it's too late. The not understanding of what she's ready to face comes across on Orimar's face and has been read.
Oh my goodness. Get out of town. It worked on you? I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Everybody else should know me so much better.
Well. Wait, so this would mean that. What did you give up to do that?
Orimar Vale, you should know. You paid for the soup.
Ah. Well. Okay. To explain, I guess, in context, we had a discussion a little while ago about the nature of having people's names changed by the likes of meta physicians and the like, and we established that it is a soup in a similar vein to heartroot tea. So yeah, Orimar kind of like clasps his hands in apology and is like,
yeah, I would like, actually, there is a montage of memory. Like, as the magical veil woven by this soup is pierced a little bit, we can see a younger Dantonia on the hull of a ship wearing red feather colors. She is fighting valiantly against a crew of young but sharp-eyed pirates. And we can see standing on the hull of a ship that has ridden aside Dantonia's, Orimar Vale. A much younger Orimar Vale, with Calivar at his side. This is a raid where the ship that you caught up to decided not to go quietly, and there is going to be at least some fighting before parley. Mm-hmm. But we can see that the Uhuru clearly has the numbers in this fight. Mm-hmm. There are so many more members of the Uhuru than there would be of this other ship. You and Calivar are looking down as the captain of this other ship is like taken the mid-deck and is currently crossing blades with many, many members of the Uhuru.
Mm. You know, I think I got the shot. I could take it. Oh my gosh, I always love this part. Ah, the thrill. It really puts the wind up you. Oh, right, taking the shot. Yes. Ooh. But they're doing so well. They're doing so well. Oh, like, Jeffrey is about to go get the killing blow, and do you really want to go and take that from him?
I know exactly what you're about, and I can't even with you right now.
Fine, fine, rain on the parade, but I guess we've got...
No, 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 you want to go fight that captain. Be my guest.
Thank you.
I'll just be here, taking care of the ship.
I mean, somebody has to while I'm out having fun. And he gives the widest, wide smile.
Before Orimar, like, leaps onto the other deck, Calivar reaches out, puts a hand on Orimar's shoulder, and then traces it over to his neck and straightens out his collar. Fix your clothing before you go out and represent this ship.
Always keep him in shop. And he just kind of turns and jumps off the off whatever balcony they were standing on immediately to kind of wade into the sword fighting.
Yeah, I think like the Uhuru is like flying just a bit higher than this other ship. Mm. So
we get some proper air. There's nice fluttering of coat on a side shot as Orimar mid leap pulls a rapier that he had stowed at his waist to kind of land. It's a proper full action scene to land into a combat role and immediately run some jobber through. And it's like, all right, who's next?
Yeah, and like, I think seeing you land on the deck, the members of the Uhuru crew that were fighting this other captain stand back and give room for the two of you. And, like, suddenly, I think, like, your appearance, the dramatic way that you rolled into the deck, like, kind of all of the fighting stops for a second as she readies, I think, we're going to say it, D'Antonia is holding two blades. Mm. She readies her blades and, like, kind of levels them against you, and the two of you come together in a clash, and that brings us back to the present.
Do you still happen to fight with two swords? It was an admirable duel.
When the occasion arises, which is less and less these days.
Mm.
People of our age and all that.
Yes. When I was in my 20s, I never thought that the love of battle was something that would fade from you in old age. But then, world experiences haven't quite hit you at that point.
And... you know, when you found me, what was I even fighting for? Some cargo.
Mm. Still, it's a joy I always find to stick it to the red feathers. It is the even greater joy when they realize what they're doing, turn round and burn the whole thing down with you.
I mean, it was the right thing to do at the time. It was the safe thing to do at the time. But I look back, I don't know that I spent all the time in between doing the right thing.
Hmm. You'd be surprised how long you actually have to make peace with the poor decisions you've made in your past. After all, if you decided to dwell on them for the rest of your days, then, well, you might not actually have the rousing spirit to do right in the future for fear of doing wrong.
The things I've done feel wrong. They feel wrong. But I also feel like they couldn't have gone any other way.
Hmm.
Seeing Zana, she grew up right.
I suppose the Kessler children have inspired us both.
They have. And I gotta credit that to good parenting.
Orimar thinks of the hand grip strength contest upon meeting the family, and gives a dry wheeze.
I suppose so. Strong of conviction, if nothing else.
But of course, I'm not the only one who's facing some things.
Oh.
You're going to be facing something too, aren't you?
A day doesn't go by when the world wants to go and test Orimar Vale, he says, smiling.
I wouldn't be smiling so much. She should be dropping anchor. Maybe in a couple hours.
What?
Well, you have to know. a member of her fleet, the Star Watcher of one of her best fighting ships, having a coming-of-age ceremony, and not only that, an important diplomatic matter to top, as we owe favors to a captain of another ship who's having a Star Watcher in the same coming-of-age ceremony? The Bandit Queen will be here.
There's an open of a mouth, then a close of a mouth. An open of a mouth with a sloshing background sound, as Oromar is definitely too full of liquid. Excuse me a moment. He stands. I think instead of going to the bathroom, just literally walks out of the building in a mild confusion of how best to kind of handle the current circumstances. There's a fight or flight response kicks in use to the Bandit Queen showing up. And instead of like a sensible, normal mortal excusing themselves to the bathroom for 5 minutes, he just walks outside before, and then too late to realize what he's done.
I think you walk outside and like, we can see this moment impacting Oromar, and around you there is a cartoon like scene of wreckage around you. There are overturned carts, there are people who have been tarred and feathered. Jackie Chan is currently fighting a horde of people holding a baby and all of the plates and apples that Gable had for a period of time. It is chaotic and wacky out here.
Gable has done the thing where, like, Travis has already gone away. Gable crashed off screen in a slew of apples and plates. They walk back, like, bruised, teeth missing, go up to one of the tables with the tea and says, "Can I have this?" Downs it. Puts it down. Then, huffing and puffing, "All right." Starts running again.
Bounding off into the night.
I think the only thing that you miss there is that after the crash, the unicycle tire rolls back.
Yeah, yeah. Woggity, 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 woggity.
Yeah, Oromar almost does a spit take and realizes how long and high pressure that would probably be, and does his best to not. I think there's a shot of him covering his mouth and a loud sputtering sound and then him coughing.
This evening is going to be very, very long and complicated, and I'm not sure how I feel about this. Right. I didn't see Jonnet with them. Where did Jonnet go?
I think with that, like, D'Antonia comes up behind you. Well, we can agree on this evening being long and complicated, that's for sure. But I figured, two people such as us, we're both facing heavy challenges.
Please tell me that your challenges also involve a 24-foot turkey, so I am not alone in the complete madness that I just saw.
D'Antonia stops and thinks for a second. I think if Winona were here right now, she would think that D'Antonia Crossblade is a 20-foot tall turkey in certain respects.
I think Oromar turns to her, gives a genuine smile, says, "Size queen," and then goes for kind of like a clap handshake.
Yeah, she'll meet it in kind, and with that, like, we'll zoom in on the grip between their arms and zoom out, and that is the grip between Douglas and Jonnet's arm. As Jonnet is pulled onto this chicken, and very quickly this chicken is pacing through the high grass around the Kessler Farms.
Has somebody been trying to steal or mess with the chickens recently?
No, I haven't. No one's messed with it recently. Swear to God, this better not be his doing. And he's just going to keep, he's going to kind of like, you know, urge the chicken to go faster.
As you do that, you can see another chicken running through the grasses, and they'll let out a call. Like, what would be a kind of sounder call that people in Acheron, like different farmers, would call out to each other, you know, to sound off about, like, oh, I've seen something, I haven't seen anything, are you okay? That sort of thing. Is it like a whistle? Is it...
I feel like there's, probably some kind of call and response between, like, a downward swope, like,
yeah,
like the call that, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, so there's the questioning, and you can see that the DERFs are out on their chickens, kind of responding to, you know, what you would imagine is the same thing that you're responding to, gunshots in the night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Jonnet probably takes up the response of just, Denny?
Yeah, and Denny comes out of, like, the brush. Oh, good, you're here. Douglas, what's up? What's wrong?
And for a while, he's not saying anything. He's just kind of, riding, and, like, he's in like four different places at once mentally. He's mm-hmm. thinking about all sorts of different things, so it doesn't register at first. And then as he's riding, he kind of blinks out of it, kind of looks back towards, because is Denny riding on a chicken or just kind of popping out like, hey?
Denny's riding on a chicken. Denny's on a chicken back as well.
So he's kind of keeping up with everybody right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's gonna kind of look back as he's riding, and I don't know exactly what's going on. I hear gunshots. Apparently, the rest of you have as well. So let's head to the coops, see what's going on, and handle it from there.
I don't. Who's on watch tonight? The coyotes might be back. They were sniffing around a couple days ago.
You know, supposed to be Brian, but you know how that boy is.
And like you start approaching the extreme ends of the fencing. And we now get to an investigation. I would like Tyler Bees,
hello,
decide on the difficulty that you want to make a roll. And the higher the difficulty, the more valuable the information that I'm going to give you if you succeed.
What are we rolling on?
Any skill that could be related to investigation. So okay. Perception would be one, but if you can see another on your sheet that you feel might be more relevant, we can let you go with that.
They're all equally green.
So I know of perception. I don't know what the other skills Douglas would be able to...
Perception might be the way to go.
The best one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So then, yeah, I'll do that.
I'll just do it again, but I'm going to roll against a one.
Okay. Jonnet's going for an easy one.
I'm going to go two.
Okay. Average.
Two green, two purple. Yeah.
And all Bees, right. what are you rolling against?
Let's do hard.
All
right. That was the four dice, right?
That was hard is three.
Oh, daunting is
four.
Man, it sucks.
Yeah, let's go hard then.
So I got a failure and a threat.
I got a success and a threat.
A success and a threat, and that was hard. Okay.
Yes.
Wait, can I? No, it's already happened.
I mean, what?
Oh, I was about to say, like, my eyes open. I want a blue dice, but.
Yeah, roll the blue die.
That's fair.
Okay, well, then it's just a failure.
Oh, no. Okay.
Better than nothing.
Okay. So, Jonnet, you are looking around, and it's dark out here. Like, you don't have a lantern. All the other folks on their chickens, like, came in with lanterns. Douglas and you kind of took off. So you are looking around, but there's a lot of commotion happening, and also... You, similar to Douglas, are sitting with a lot of emotions. Like, this is a big scene, and you've had some time as y'all were riding out to kind of sit with that. So I feel like that's what's weighing on you more than anything else. Douglas, you are somebody who, you know, has to sit with heavy emotions frequently. And you are kind of sitting with these emotions, but also you are a farmer. And this is your livelihood. So you can sort of put everything aside to focus on important things that might be going on around you. And you do just that as you see the fences around your chicken enclosure, which is the Griffin chicken enclosures for like most of Acheron. Like people come with their mega griffins to you to store and look after. This is kind of a community effort. You see that the fence has knocked down. There are two like kind of enclosures. There are the chickens and then an enclosure for the roosters. They are kept around each other but separate, with the roosters on the outside as the roosters kind of ward off coyotes that are sniffing around. So if, you know, whatever Cooper is out there in the night looking after the griffins doesn't manage to ward off any coyotes, it's usually up to the roosters after that. You can see that like these chicken fences are kind of rudimentary. The chickens don't usually try to wander. They need something to give them a general guided area, but you give them plenty of feed, you give them plenty of room to run around. They don't usually tend to wander, and least of all, attack their fencing. This is chicken wire that has been sort of thinly laid up, and you can see that the heavy wooden posts that are hammered into the ground or planted into the ground with their concrete bases, it looks like it has been broken. And whatever wiring that is suspended across it is also like partially trampled. But with your success, you can see that it's not as though these posts were snapped due to weight being pushed against them. It looks like it was cut or sawed in some way. And that the wiring, like, does have the wearing and stretching of it being trampled, but there's areas, especially at the top, where it looks like it has either been cut or snapped altogether.
Okay, so pretty much from the looks of it, somebody kind of cut towards the bottom of the stakes, and then it started to fall, and then presumably either cut the wiring at the top to help it fall completely, or it just snapped from the weight.
Your first conclusion is spot on. That's exactly mm-hmm. what it looks like happened.
Okay. Yeah, first thing he's gonna do is is that gate fully down, or is it kind of just leaning?
It's fully down.
Okay, so he's gonna ride on top of it to get into the pen itself. And then first thing he's going to do is just check on the chickens, make sure, see what's going on with them.
It's pretty easy for you to assess. They are not here, which is a big red flag for you as a farmer. Yeah. These chickens are not here, and I think this will be the extent of your initial roll. These chickens aren't here, and like if a fence were to come down, there is a chance that a couple chickens might, you know, break loose, make a run for it. A couple of roosters might enter the pen and like start causing trouble the way roosters tend to cause trouble in a hen house. But for all of them to be gone, that's not right.
Yeah. Okay. Where's Brian?
That's a good question.
All right. So he's going to call out for Brian a couple times. Wait for a response.
Brian!
Brian! Damn it, Brian. Where are you?
Brian!
You hear the chorus of the derfs on their chickens around you calling hoo hoo. And then, Jonnet, I'll give you this. You can hear some shouting in an argument. There's like a very high-pitched voice that's like kind of thrown a fit, maybe crying a little bit.
Where is it coming from in relationship to the coop?
For outside the coop, it's around the derfs.
Okay. Jonnet kind of taps Douglas on like his shoulder and maybe like just points to at like, you know, 3 o'clock and is like, turn around this way.
He's going to turn around.
Douglas, you shine a light. You can see who the like, I'm going to say 7-year-old Dina Durf, who is on like one of her chickens, which is like one that wouldn't normally be ready for riding, but she's seven, so like she can get by on it. And she is having a heated argument with her father right now.
Everything all right?
Everything's fine. I'm just trying to get this kid to go home. You have to go home. It's late and dangerous. There are coyotes out. If your chicken spooks, who's going to find you?
I don't want to go home. I'm helping. I'm helping.
Also, I know something that none of y'all know. So there.
Let the girl speak.
Dina! First off, hey!
The elder Durf, who we have not named. We don't know what the name of the Durf father would be.
Daryl Durf.
Daryl Durf.
So many D's!
Sheesh. Sheesh.
We got Dennis. We got Dina. We got...
That's too much.
Daryl...
And his wife's Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah Durf. Debbie Durf.
It's a family letter.
Yeah, it's a family letter. he like shoots, it's a dad look over to Douglas, you know, a long tired dad look as Jonnet, you know, makes his way over to Dina. Dina goes, I heard a monster scream and I saw a giant.
Okay. Where? What did they scream about?
Well, they didn't scream words. They screamed monster sounds. You know how monsters are.
Okay, of course, yeah. Big, big, big guttural, rattly sounds, trembly earth. Where did you hear the monster sounds? Were they coming from the coop?
They were coming from near the coop, which I was trying to tell everybody. That's probably what Brian was shooting at. The big giant monster. With big white face, no mouth.
Big white face, no mouth? Wait, so... How close were you to this monster? Did you see when you saw it?
I wasn't close to the monster, Jonnet. It's giant. I saw it from far away.
Okay. Jonnet looks back at Douglas and like he's maybe he looks back at Douglas with maybe like a newfound like 2/5 of understanding of the dad look that the other D just gave him. I was like, hey, yeah, all
you
right.
Look at him like, see what I've been dealing with?
And so, okay, he's a big old giant. I get it. Is there anything else that you can tell us about this giant? Where do you think it went? It's if it was so big, where do you think it is now?
I don't know. The giant I saw, I heard a scream, I looked out my window, I saw in the distance the giant, it like let out a scream without its mouth, because it didn't have no mouth, and then it ran like a man holding his pants up.
Like a man holding his pants up?
You know if you're going through the water and you got long pants on and you don't want the ends of the pants to drip through the water, so you kind of hold them up and you do that step and she like... She, like, gets off her chicken and, like, holds up her nightgown.
We don't
and,
have
like,
to do... Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
like
yeah,
one of
no,
these?
That's... Yeah. No, I totally get Jonnet to demonstrate that he understands, also dismounts, also pulls up his some of his pants and then, like, does the thing. I get that. Uh-huh.
She folds her arms and she nods exactly like that. Yeah.
Well, it ran away. What direction did it go in?
I don't know. There's a lot of grass around.
Okay.
Well so then, y'all better be looking for a monster that's giant, that's got no mouth, and runs like a man holding his pants up.
All right. Well, Den, what's her name again?
Dina.
Dina. Thank
Dina
you.
Dina Durf.
All right. Well, Dina, thank you. This was super helpful. We're going to need to look for, if there was a monster walking around in the grass, then that means there's got to be big old footprints or some kind of trail. So we got to find the trail. And if you know you heard it, then you might be able to find the trail. Look for the trail, but don't go after it. You find us when you find the trail.
How about you are not sending my 7-year-old daughter to wander around the grass at all hours of the night, Jonnet Kessler?
Douglas is going to get off his chicken at that point and kind of like lock eyes with oh my God, what did Daryl? Daryl there. And just kind of nod, like, I understand what you're saying. I agree. And he's going to put a hand on Jonnet's shoulder and just kind of like a light squeeze, like, come on now. So he's going to take a knee right in front of Dina and be like, look, little baby, thank you very much for all your help. You have been a great help here. Now, with you having those amazing eagle eyes that you saw everything, we need you to do a very, very important job for us. We need you to go back to your house and patrol with your chicken here. Make sure to get that practice in riding it and make sure that your chickens are safe. You understand me?
Of course, Mr. Stone. I'll do it right away.
All right. Now, you just need to make sure, because we can't have everybody losing chickens now. So you are in charge of your house. Do you understand me? Now, don't leave your house for any reason.
She puffs up her chest and like puts her hands on her hips like, you could count on me.
All right. There we go. That's what I'm talking about. And he like pats her on the head and he gives her like a little closest thing to like a saltwater taffy that I guess they have there.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to, like, I guess it'll be like some sort of malt candy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we got malt in the area. We might as well use it.
Yep. So then, he gives her one of those. And then, all right, now go on now.
Now, wait a minute. You would give me malt candies when you sent me on important.
And he's going to just stare at him and just go,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess Jonnet's going to turn to Douglas and, is this news to you?
Yeah. Believe it or not, we haven't had many no-face giants running around holding their pants up. It's kind of a new occurrence here.
I mean, I haven't been gone that long, but that seems like something that people would notice if it made its way into town and, So...
I don't know how serious I'd take Dina. I mean, she gets to her dreams, you know.
Understand, but this is no normal occurrence now, Daryl. You got to understand, all my chickens are gone. These chickens don't just disappear like that. And why it might not be exactly what you said.
Whoa. Even Luella. She's been broody.
Well, she's gone now. All of them. Bruhilda, Bertha, Agnes, Marge, Abigail, Mary, Deborah, Vicky, all of them. Gone.
That's
beautiful ladies.
Well, then maybe it is a monster. I've never heard of any monster in the area.
It may be a monster. It may not be a monster. All we know is that she saw something here, caused a disturbance. Brian shot at it. So that explains the bullet. That explains the gunshots. So now we need to spread out. He's going to, at that point, hop back onto his chicken. All right, everybody, spread out in a general area, not too far from one another. Make sure you can see somebody else wherever you are. Look around for any clues to tracks or something akin to something making its way away from the pen. And as soon as you see something, call out so everybody else can head that way.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
The history of role-playing games is weird and wild, and we here at System Mastery are determined to look through it all.
Every heartbreaker that drove a man to bankruptcy to see his vision of D&D with Philly-specific armor maintenance rules come to fruition.
Every game where you get increasingly certain as you read it that this is all just one person's weird fetish.
Every system that painstakingly recreates how medieval life was really like, and then also you can cast Fireball.
The System Mastery podcast wallows in the filth of RPG history. Come.
Join us in the muck
at System Mastery.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. like Asians Represent. Asians Represent celebrates Asian creators and diversity in the gaming community. Join hosts Agatha Cheng and Daniel Kwan as they discuss gaming, genre, and representation with their guests and occasionally argue with each other about the sound of Agatha's beloved air horn app. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. You can stream his short film, Lining, on the Roku channel for free. Just search for The Shortlist, Summer. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, Neo Scum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. And once for our friends ne'er to rise, twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.